Good morning. It's Monday, April 22nd, Earth Day. I'm Gideon Resnick in for Shumita Basu. This is Apple News Today. On today's show, what we know about the judge presiding over Trump's criminal case in New York, how drug shortages are putting Americans at risk, and a fervent salad debate. But first, let's take a quick look at some other stories that are in the news. Over the weekend, the House of Representatives passed a series of bills that will provide nearly $100 billion in foreign aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. The Senate is expected to consider the measures this week, and President Biden is expected to sign. House Speaker Mike Johnson had broken the aid plan into separate bills. That was to get around objections from some Republicans to more aid for Ukraine. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky told NBC about how the aid could make a difference.
Thank you. I think this support will really strengthen the armed forces of Ukraine. And we will have a chance for victory if Ukraine really gets the weapons system, which we need so much, which the thousands of soldiers need so much.
In Israel, even as more U.S. aid is approved, there's new criticism of Israel's military. Axios reports that the U.S. is planning to sanction an Israeli unit for human rights violations in the West Bank. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu says that he'll fight any sanctions. Also, Israel's military intelligence chief is resigning. This is the most senior figure to step down following the failure to anticipate the Hamas attack inside Israel on October 7th. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court is hearing a case that could affect homelessness in America as the number of Americans lacking shelter hits record levels. The case focuses on an Oregon city with a ban on camping. Officials there say the law keeps people safe because tent encampments are often sites of crime, drug use, and fires. Advocates for unhoused people say the law punishes people who can't afford a place to live. And Taylor Swift's latest album, The Tortured Poets Department, is smashing records on Spotify, Apple Music, and Amazon Music. Swift got more than 300 million Spotify streams in a single day. Apple Music says that first day numbers make this record the, quote, biggest pop album of all time. And I love you. It's ruining my life. That song, Fortnite, featuring Post Malone, became the most streamed track in a single day in Spotify history. And there could be more. If the album debuts at number one on the U.S. Billboard charts, Swift would tie Jay-Z with 14 number one albums. That would put those two behind only the Beatles. Opening arguments are set to begin in Trump's criminal case in New York today. He's pleaded not guilty to multiple charges that he falsified business records to cover up hush money payments to an adult film actress. Judge Juan Merchan is the New York Supreme Court justice presiding over this case.
He's a fairly experienced trial court judge. He's been on the felony court for about 15 years.
That's Bart Jansen, Justice Department correspondent for USA Today. He told me it's not only that Merchan is experienced overall, he's dealt with matters pertaining to Trump pretty recently.
In 2022, he oversaw the criminal charges against two parts of the Trump Organization, which were accused of tax fraud. And the case resulted in convictions, and Merchan sentenced the two companies to a combined $1.6 million fine.
Trump has used that to claim that Merchan is biased against him. And Trump has tried unsuccessfully to have him removed from the case. He's also leveled complaints against Merchan's daughter because she works for a digital marketing agency that has worked for Democratic candidates. The New York State Advisory Committee on Judicial Ethics said that her work didn't taint the judge's impartiality. Jansen says Merchan's past work on the Trump Organization case, as well as others, provides some insight into how he typically works.
Independent legal experts tend to say that he's just a very businesslike judge. He's very efficient. He likes to keep things moving along. That trial, you know, a relatively high profile trial, even without Trump himself being a defendant in that case, ran relatively smoothly.
In the first week of this trial, Mershon presided over the whittling down of hundreds of prospective jurors to get 12 selected. And tomorrow, Mershon will allow prosecutors to make the case that Trump has violated a gag order. It's intended to keep him from intimidating witnesses and others involved in the trial. That could represent another flashpoint for the judge as he tries to keep things in order in this unprecedented case that has tremendous outside attention. Drug shortages in the U.S. are at an all-time high. The Wall Street Journal chronicled some frenzied stories of people going to pharmacies eager to refill their prescriptions, only to find that they couldn't. And doctors forced to use lesser substitutes. Wall Street Journal reporter Liz Essley-White told us about some of the drugs impacted here.
Really popular diabetes drugs like Ozempic, Mounjaro, as well as life-saving allergy treatment epinephrine, common antibiotics such as amoxicillin, which is, you know, what you get your kid when they have an earache, chemotherapy medications, injections that hospitals commonly use in intensive care and like really high-stakes medical situations.
More than 300 drugs were in short supply in the first quarter of this year, the highest level in more than two decades of available data. Some drug companies say that this issue has to do with consumer demand. But health economists the journal spoke to said this is a longer-term problem. It has to do with a broken supply chain that's making it difficult for generic drug makers to remain in business. Many of those drug makers have left the industry or offshored their production to other countries.
The problem is that they've become so cheap that it's hard to make them in America now. And a lot of businesses have just gotten out of the business of making them. And so we're only down to like a couple suppliers of some of these important medications.
That is especially true for sterile injectables. These drugs are hard to make and hospitals go through them quickly.
For example, the chemotherapy drug carboplatin or the chemotherapy drug cisplatin. We only have a handful of those manufacturers. So if one of them has an issue, like their production line needs to be shut down to address a safety problem, then we don't have a lot of slack in the system to make up for them shutting down.
An anesthesiologist the journal spoke to said that he's frustrated by how often he's having to substitute drugs because of shortages. And this is all having a huge impact on patients as well.
It can mean that they have to wait longer to get a key treatment. Their chemotherapy appointment gets pushed back a couple weeks or something like that, which is pretty scary when you're facing a disease like cancer.
There are many ideas on the table, but fixing the problem may need a major change to the business model. And that might include allowing price increases for generic medicines so more companies would be motivated to make these vital drugs. We're going to close today with a pretty fun food debate, or at least one I think is enjoyable to have. It's related to a question about when a food you know and love stops being said food, and what it means to be a purist about such things. Like, for example, does pineapple belong on a slice of pizza? Would you consider a hot dog a sandwich or no? This particular argument comes to us from The Atlantic, which takes a look at the recent evolution of the beloved Caesar salad. It has an interesting origin story that, like a lot of food inventions, came from necessity. In 1924, Cesar Cardini's restaurant in Mexico was swamped with folks who had crossed the border from San Diego to get around Prohibition. He was low on ingredients, so he threw together what he had: a dressing made of egg, oil, garlic, salt, Worcestershire sauce, and citrus juice, all over romaine lettuce. Add some Parmesan cheese and croutons, and a star we know as Caesar was born. But as of late, The Atlantic writes, there have been so many surprising variations on the theme. Quote unquote, Caesar salads with kimchi, orange zest, fried chickpeas, pig ear, and more. And in some cases, missing the hallmarks of the original salad itself, including, but not limited to, romaine lettuce. Food pros tell The Atlantic that Caesar is a strong enough signifier that the word itself can sell practically any salad, even when it doesn't look or taste quite like a classic Caesar. The legacy and popularity of the perfectly garlicky, salty dish is that it endures a century later in so many forms. As The Atlantic puts it, the Caesar is forever, which means it's forever being manipulated, for better and for worse. You can find all these stories and more in the Apple News app. And if you are already listening in the news app right now, we have a narrated article for Earth Day coming up next from The New Yorker. It looks at how a former NYPD official is now trying to tame New York City's massive trash problem and why the city is such a difficult place to keep clean. If you're listening in the podcast app, you can follow Apple News Plus Narrated to find that story. And I'll be back with the news tomorrow.